Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Georgia Spence. Georgia is an associate nutritionist registered with the Association for Nutrition and specialises in women's health. Georgia works one day a week for her nutrition business, Georgia Spence Nutrition, and works 4 days in the NHS. Georgia has been working with patients one-to-one over the last 3 years and aims to empower women's health through nourishment and balance, using evidence-based methods designed to create long-lasting positive results in a calm and supportive environment. In this week's episode, in celebration of International Women's Day, we are talking all about endometriosis and the link to eating disorders and disordered eating. Endometriosis is something I really didn't know much about, and so it was incredible to sit down with Georgia, who's an expert in this topic, to learn all about endometriosis, the impact it can have on disordered eating, and when we need to get help for different symptoms that can occur. So, Georgia, it's so lovely to have you on the podcast. I am so excited to speak to you. I feel like I've met you so much, but we've never actually had a one-to-one chat. So, it's so lovely.
Thank you so much for having me. I was so excited when you said, oh, do you want to come on? I was like, absolutely, yes, let's book it in.
Amazing. That's so nice to hear. So, just for the listeners, did you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely, yes, thank you. So my name's Georgia. I'm a registered associate nutritionist with the Association for Nutrition. I specialise in women's health. And just to make it very clear to the readers, or listeners, sorry, I don't specialise in eating disorders, but I do support an eating disorders dietitian. But just to fully be transparent, I'm not a specialist in eating disorders. But I've been supporting women now, gosh, it'll be about 5 years, which is crazy. Time really does fly. So yeah, I absolutely love it. So I have my remote clinic, and then I offer up support to other nutrition businesses as well, doing various different bits and bobs. But thank you.
That's
again.
That's amazing. Do you know, it's so funny because, like, you say 5 years, and in my head, I don't think we've ever discussed age, but in my head, we're a similar age. And I'm like, how have you been doing it for 5 years? And then I think, oh my God, no, that's probably about wrong.
Yeah, it's scary. It goes so quickly, doesn't it? I know when I was like, 5 years? Oh yeah, it is 5 years. I have to like come back. I'm like, oh gosh. And it's one of the most amazing things. And honestly, I'm so lucky to do a job that I just absolutely adore and love. And every day you learn something different. And the people that I work with and support are just inspirational, to put it politely. Mm. They are wonderful. So yeah, very, very lucky to do the job that I do.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. And well, your clients are so lucky to have someone that's so passionate about supporting them. And I guess for the listeners, so you mentioned that you help people with like women's health and stuff like that. What is it specifically that you help with in terms of like a nutritional aspect?
Yeah, so it's really varied. So women's health is quite a broad area of support. So it can be individuals living with polycystic ovary syndrome or PCOS, which I know we're going to touch on today. It can be individuals living with menopause, endometriosis. It really varies. Everyone is so different that I work with. It could be some very light touch nutrition support to sort of help them sort of gain confidence with their own nutrition. I'm very much for promoting independence rather than sort of developing that dependence, because ultimately, you know, I can work with people, but actually it's empowering. That's what I aim to do, empower women and to take control of their own lives without having to rely upon practitioners. So yeah, it really varies depending upon their confidence levels.
Yeah, I think that's amazing because, you know, I mean, I don't think this is just a female only thing, but the misinformation of nutrition nowadays, in particular when you're talking about like specific things, so you know, like the menopause or different things like that, it's so confusing. When you, I know my mum's been going through the menopause and she's like, well, how can I improve my nutrition? And you go online and you're like, well, I actually have no idea, because there's just so much and so many people selling diet fads or new trends. And so the fact that you're so passionate about giving people that knowledge so they can take it away and not become reliant on you, I think that's amazing.
Thank you. It's all about that evidence base, and you're completely right. You sort of Google, you know, whether it be PCOS, you know, menopause, whatever it is you want into Google, and it can be really bombarding and really overwhelming. And actually, if you don't, you know, I'm very lucky in that I've obviously done my degree and that's the career that I've chosen. But if you haven't got that education background and actually you've never sort of looked at nutrition before, it's really scary. And you're seeing all this scaremongering going on, and it's just frightening. It's really frightening. So yeah, if I can even just help, you know, two people, you know, to feel empowered that they know the knowledge and know what's accurate and what isn't accurate, That's a job well done. And so yeah, that's all I'm about, or try to be about.
Yeah. But I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is that it is so scaremongering. And it's interesting actually, because I was having this conversation with somebody this morning, in that when we talk about menopause, we only talk about like, oh my God, you're gonna gain loads of weight and your body's gonna change. We don't talk about all the other things. And you know, I've not been through menopause myself, but I can imagine it's a very distressing time from seeing my mum go through it. But there are also so many other things that change, negatives and positives. And so it annoys me so much that as a culture, we're so fixated on the weight aspect.
Absolutely. And it's the same with, I know we're going to touch on this, but PCOS, the fixation on weight and the talk of weight.
Yes.
And actually, that is probably it's not even one tenth, I would say. And actually, as a society, we really fixate and home in on weight. And why is it that we do that, and is that correct? I would, in my personal opinion, would argue no, not really. But yeah,
and that's one thing I was going to say, which leads us I guess nicely to talk about PCOS, is that I could tell you what it stands for, and I've heard people say that they've, you know, they've got it, and instantly my thought is, oh, so you must struggle with, like, you know, struggle with weight, or like being able to maintain a certain weight or what have you. That's the only thing, I guess, you know, maybe I should have gone out and done some more research, but that is the first thing that you kind of hear about and know about. So I guess for the listeners, would you mind explaining what it is and I guess maybe the symptoms of it?
No, and I think that's really important. Actually, it's really important, sorry, to validate. Actually, you're not the only person that thinks that and says that, because that is so true. And that, I think, again, is what we're almost led to believe. And when you think of it, if you haven't done the research, actually, it's that, oh, you must struggle with your weight. And actually, there's so much to it. So yeah, for the listeners, polycystic ovary syndrome, or PCOS, or, you know, however you want to pronounce it, it's really common, actually. It impacts around 1 in 10 women in the UK. And actually, new research which is coming out at the moment is suggesting it might actually be closer to 1 in 8. So that's actually quite a significant amount of people. Yeah. And it's important to note that over half of these people don't actually have symptoms, and they're not actually aware of the symptoms. And actually, how many people have PCOS and don't know they have PCOS? And that, again, is astounding. And I think as well with, sorry, just the main features I'll mention there. So irregular periods, excess androgen, which can cause physical symptoms such as excess facial hair or body hair, and then polycystic ovaries. So this is where the ovaries are actually enlarged, and they might have sort of fluid-filled sacs that surround the egg. And just to be really clear, I think when you say polycystic, people home in on the word cystic there, but actually they're not cysts, and that's another misconception. But actually, what I wanted to touch on was, you know, how many individuals who have periods have irregular periods and have painful periods, and how many of them people have been told by sort of peers, loved ones, even medical practitioners, oh, it's normal. And actually, it's not normal. Painful and irregular periods are not normal. And if you, as a listener to this podcast, take nothing from this conversation other than painful periods or irregular periods are not normal, just take that and please go and see a healthcare practitioner, because actually, we don't need to suffer in silence. And I think it's really important that we do advocate and sort of seek that support when we need to. So yeah, sort of talking about the follicles. So the follicles are around the ovaries, and this is quite technical. So they're actually underdeveloped sacs in which the eggs develop. And then in PCOS, these sacs are often unable to release the egg, which means that ovulation doesn't take place or doesn't always take place. And that's what can impact upon things like your fertility or your ability to conceive, which is another sort of sign or symptom of PCOS. But yeah, again, I'm going to go through the symptoms, but actually, we're all different. I'm different, Anne's different, we're all different people. And actually, some of these symptoms might not be applicable to everyone with PCOS, and there might be some new ones that are sort of individual to you. And like I say, 50% of people of, you know, living with PCOS don't actually have symptoms. So these are completely relevant to you if you're listening and have PCOS. So the signs and symptoms normally sort of become more apparent or sort of develop or sort of become worse around sort of your late teens, early 20s. So like I say, it can be irregular periods or no periods at all. Things like difficulty falling pregnant, excess hair normally on your face, chest, back or your backside. Things like weight gain, thinning hair or hair loss from your head. Things like oily skin and acne-prone skin is actually quite common in individuals living with PCOS. And then something called insulin resistance. So insulin is the hormone which regulates your blood sugar. And so when the body can't use that insulin effectively, that's the insulin resistance. And that is what can cause that excess body hair that it creates, that hormone androgen, which then causes that body hair grow. And yes, because of the insulin resistance, it is associated with a higher risk of developing things like type 2 diabetes. It's also sort of associated with higher cholesterol levels, as often individuals with PCOS have an imbalance of their cholesterol. So that's kind of the main sort of things. But like I say, everyone is different that lives with PCOS.
Amazing, thank you. And I guess that makes it tricky, doesn't it, in terms of, because the symptoms are so varied, kind of understanding. I just wanted to ask a few things.
Of course.
Because, I mean, purely just to clear them up in my mind.
Yeah.
So if I'm getting like a painful period, should I go to the doctor? Like, am I not supposed to be experiencing pain when I'm on my period?
No, get yourself to the doctors. I think there's a difference. There's a difference between pain and uncomfort. If you're uncomfortable, see, even in that situation, I would recommend going to the doctors anyway. I'm talking from personal experience, actually, this one. I've always had very, very painful periods, even since, you know, since I started menstruating. And I went to the doctors and I went for tests. And actually, for me, it was a peace of mind that nothing was going on. And then they sort of looked at different sort of management for that. I think something that people experience, not always, but some people, you know, will go to the doctors and say, I'm having painful periods, to the point where they're sort of passing out from pain, their life quality is impacted. Actually, then they're sort of being given things like hormonal contraception, which, again, in my personal opinion, isn't the answer. It's a management, and it might be a management technique for a person, but actually not for everybody. That's not me sort of shaming people that take hormonal contraception for that management. It's just that perhaps isn't your only option, and I want to highlight that it's not your only option, because I think so many times, you know, we're in a clinical setting and actually we're being offered, you know, what we perceive to be treatment, and it might very well be treatment or management. And actually, we feel like we don't have a voice. And actually, we do. You are very, very entitled to say, no, thank you, I don't want to try that right now. But yeah, if your period pain is impacting your quality of life, if you're having to take time off work, time off school, you know, it's really impacting things like your mood. It's really causing you to have low mood, anxiety, stress, sort of you're stressing about getting your next period because you're scared of how painful it's going to be. That, to me, is the time you need to go to doctors. But yeah, any uncomfort, I would go to your doctors personally, just to make sure that, you know, there isn't anything going on that we can look at supporting.
Yeah, well, that's really, thank you so much for sharing that, Georgia. I think that's really important, because I think as girls, when we're at school, I don't know, for me it was always just like, yeah, obviously you're going to be in pain when you have your period, like you're bleeding or what have you. But I think, as you say, you know, if it's causing that much pain to you that it's impacting day-to-day life or, you know, activities that you're getting up to, you know, if your leg just suddenly started being that painful, you wouldn't not go to the doctor. But I think because we have that link of like, oh, it's because it's my period, you don't think. And also, how do I say this without how it's going to sound? As women, we do put up with pain that, you know, is very much normalized. So it's, yeah, I think that's my point, is that, you know, pain on a period is so normalized. So thank you so much for highlighting that it's actually not normal.
It's not open.
Or that it does need to be checked out. And the other question I wanted to ask, just from when you were describing the symptoms, you very nicely explained like the science behind it and stuff. But if not everybody experiences symptoms, how would somebody know that they potentially have PCOS if they don't have symptoms? Or is it a case of you wouldn't?
It's difficult, because actually perhaps you wouldn't. I know from sort of working with my own clients, sometimes people find out during things like pregnancy, because they're sort of doing the scans, and actually they can be picked up at that point. Unintentionally, they can pick up that actually you have got PCOS at that point. I know my sister at the moment is pregnant, and actually they said, oh, actually you've not got PCOS, because actually they were scanning, and actually apparently if they do see it, obviously they could say, oh, actually we think you've got suspected PCOS there. And then post-pregnancy they sort of do that investigation. But to answer that shortly, you don't really know if you're not experiencing any symptoms and you aren't sort of going for checks, whether it's related to that or not. People can live with it potentially their whole lives and not know.
And is that okay to just live with it? Or are there negative impacts of PCOS that could impact somebody, which is why you would want to find out and get treatment? Or is it more of kind of, if you're having effects from this, then we'll manage and treat them, rather than this can severely impact you, therefore we need to treat it?
Yeah, so it's more management than treatment with PCOS in the majority of cases. Sort of look at managing the symptoms and side effects. The thing with PCOS, like I mentioned earlier, it can increase your risk of type 2 diabetes and high cholesterol. So it's perhaps good at that point to know you have PCOS and are more susceptible to these conditions. But actually, you probably can live, unless you're experiencing the negative symptoms of PCOS, you probably can live quite a healthy life and not know you have PCOS. But it's a very good question, actually. It's perhaps one that I haven't thought about before. But yeah, I think you probably could live quite, unless you're having sort of the side effects such as the type 2 diabetes, the high cholesterol, that infertility. Actually, perhaps you're never going to pick up on it.
Interesting.
Yeah, you probably could.
So let's say that you're in your 20s and you find out that you've got PCOS. Is there things that you would do to manage it that would then maybe reduce the impact on getting pregnant or getting fertility? Or is it sort of, you know, you find out you have PCOS maybe when you're pregnant and actually it hasn't caused any impact? Basically, what I'm trying to ask is, like, is there an impact on pregnancy and fertility that PCOS has that getting diagnosed with it would then help to reduce those symptoms later on?
So if you have been diagnosed with PCOS and you are trying to conceive and you're struggling to conceive, it depends upon the area in which you live, depending upon what sort of support you get with that. I know people that I've supported, if they're, you know, struggling for XYZ amount of dates, they can sort of look at things like IVF if needed. To sort of, there's various different things you can try and do to help your fertility, your natural fertility chances. You can sort of look at weight management if appropriate. And I'm making that word if appropriate, because actually it's not always appropriate to look at it. And actually there are other things we can do, sort of making sure we're getting that healthy, balanced diet in. I personally don't like to fixate or focus on the numbers on the scale. I don't think it determines health. I think we can look at other things. I'm very much for, let's add into the diet. Can we look at fiber intake to help manage that insulin resistance? You know, can we, you know, look at GI carbohydrates? There's so many different things that we can do rather than solely focusing on weight loss.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose it's more of a, if you know you have PCOS, you can then get support with pregnancy if you're struggling, but actually you might have PCOS and you might get pregnant anyway, and so you then wouldn't kind of need that extra support. Yeah, perfect. Another thing that I wanted to ask you, because I think it's quite commonly discussed, is the link between PCOS and disordered eating and why that can occur.
Yeah, so what we see is that people living with PCOS or PCOS, however you want to say it, are at a higher risk of developing both disordered eating or eating disorders compared to those without a diagnosis of PCOS. There are research studies, there are more research studies coming out about that. And in particular research studies, you know, they're highlighting that there's an increased risk of developing binge eating disorder and bulimia nervosa, opposed to various other types of eating disorder. That's sort of the research that's coming out. It's difficult, I think. Why? Because symptom, as I've just mentioned there previously, you know, a symptom of PCOS is weight gain or difficulty losing weight. What we are seeing is actually the recommendations for people, the typical recommendation that you first get your diagnosis of PCOS, you need to lose weight. And actually, that can be very harmful to a lot of people. And actually, it's not always appropriate to have that. And it's very similar to what you see on things like social media or sort of newspaper media sort of area, or TV even. It's this fixation on, well, if you've got that diagnosis, you need to lose weight. But actually, why? why is that the case? So just to put it bluntly, I'm asking the general, you know, the question why. Because actually, we can make positive changes to someone's diet and sort of look at things like gentle exercise to help manage PCOS without homing in on that weight. We can look at, you know, we can monitor things like blood glucose levels. So, for example, take a blood glucose sample at the point of diagnosis to see how high their sugars are in their body. Sort of say, give them the support and actually really give them that nutrition support and sort of talk about sort of what can we add in to help manage this condition. You know, can we look at adding some more fruit and veg into your diet? And then in a couple of months or a month's time, depending upon the time frame of the next appointment, do that blood glucose level again and see if there's been a difference. It doesn't always have to automatically be weight that we focus on. Particularly if somebody has a diagnosis of an eating disorder or disordered eating, whether that's an active one or one that's been historic. And what we see, like I say, we're really seeing that all the sort of media is coming out with is we need to look at weight loss. And actually, like I say, a research study found that individuals with PCOS have several risk factors for the development of eating disorder. And it was a really interesting research. This is me being an evidence-based nutritionist, I get really excited over research because it's lovely to see some research on women's health because we haven't had it for so long. And actually, what this research really found was that the risk factors for the development of eating disorder in PCOS was things like body dissatisfaction, eating and weight concerns, cognitive restraint overeating, and depressive symptoms. And actually, we need to really address that. And should we be screening individuals for PCOS for disordered eating and eating disorders to take a preventative approach? And I appreciate, and I'm not, so part of my role is that I work in the NHS. I'm not naive. I know funding's limited. I know resources are limited. I know that this costs money, and I know it's not always possible to have all these lovely sort of things. But actually, if we can screen, even if it's just a screening, if we can do a screening questionnaire at the point of PCOS diagnosis and take that preventative approach, how many people would that help?
You know what? I totally hear that we're limited on resources, what have you. But I don't think these are lovely things. I don't think these are nice to haves. I think, as you've said, if there's clear research that shows, well, not even research, you know, I think the kind of anecdotal information, like why is that not just as important, of the amount of people that have PCOS that are also struggling with disordered eating or eating disorders, if you implemented that screening measure, then you've already got the person in the clinic with you, you've already got the clinician there with them, so it's not wasting any of their time. the patient doesn't need to come in again, you know, you've got them there with you. And then, yeah, you can screen for it. And then maybe they're absolutely fine. They're doing okay. Fantastic. They don't need that extra support. But then if they are struggling with food and nutrition, you can provide that intervention. And then you don't have someone 6 months, a year later, knocking on the doors of the eating disorder service. Because they're stretched for resources as well. And actually, as a whole on the NHS, if you work together, you know, I'm such a big advocate for multidisciplinary team approaches. You know, everybody kind of needs to have an understanding of potential comorbidities or frequent things that can occur, because then we can all help each other. And I think, you know, specifically for when you're thinking about things like PCOS, and there's such a big focus in society on weight gain, because I think we can't avoid the fact that in society weight is a big thing. So it'd be easy to say, like, oh, why is there a focus on weight gain? Well, it's because we're a diet obsessed society. But then the impact that that's having on patients, if people are trying to lose weight and aren't able to lose weight. I literally was having a conversation with someone last week, and very different story. He's an older man. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, you know, all the stuff I did as a younger man to lose weight, they don't now work because I'm old, so I'm just not eating. And I was like, and how's that going for you? And he was like, well, I just keep not eating and then I binge loads. And that's unfortunately the reality of so many people, and I'm assuming probably this population group as well, is I'm going to go to the nth degree to try and lose weight, whether that's restriction, intense exercise, whatever I can possibly do. And then down the line a few hours later, that then leads to binging, which, you know, there's all of that, you know, emotional aspect like entangled in that. And actually a better approach would be, you know, that gentle nutrition, bringing in fruit and veg, like you said, having that balanced approach, bringing in movement that you enjoy. Because also there's so much talk at the moment about, you know, how your menstrual cycle is, that you should adapt your movement as your menstrual cycle goes, because at different points you'll have more or less energy, and, you know, your body needs different things. So bringing that in as well is so important. But it's, whilst that's all so useful, it's so hard to just keep talking and fighting against the diet culture aspect that says, no, ignore all that, ignore your health, we're quote unquote healthy, and you just need to be smaller. And it's like, my God, why?
I think you've just really hit the nail on the head there, Han. I think that was the most fabulous summary I've ever heard.
On such a rant.
No. And I think free the rant, because actually you're accurate and you're right. Actually, if we took this upstream preventative approach and identified people who were at risk of developing disordered eating or eating disorders, actually how many people would that support and stop from getting to that crisis situation? Quite a few. And you're right, it's difficult when you're, imagine you've been given this diagnosis, and it's a really, really stressful thing. And actually it could be very traumatic to get a PCOS diagnosis, and all you are told, lose weight. And that's then reinforced by social media and reinforced by the media, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight. And actually what we know is that people with PCOS struggle to lose weight because of the hormone imbalances. So imagine you're struggling so much and you're trying so hard. The psychological impact on that is absolutely astounding. So you're right. I appreciate your rant. I might use that again.
I think as well, even if you're not told to lose weight, let's say that you get diagnosed with PCOS and you're in a quote unquote healthy BMI body, and so you don't get that, you will still get the messaging of, oh my God, you've got PCOS, you're going to put on weight. That's the only thing that you hear. So that in itself, you know, that psychological impact of that, and I believe that would probably lead to disordered eating patterns, because you're almost putting your own preventative measures in to prevent the weight gain. So, I mean, I think we've kind of, you know, we've discussed it a bit already in terms of what people can do in terms of their diet, but I guess more from like a holistic approach rather than just focusing on nutrition, because I think sometimes, particularly if someone's struggling with an eating disorder or disordered eating, they might hear, okay, I've got to watch my carbs, I've got to do this, that, I've got the other, and so that can then get a bit tricky in itself. And obviously when you're working with people, you would see them on a one-to-one basis and give them individualized support. I guess more from like a high level view, what would your advice be to people that have been diagnosed with PCOS and are struggling to find that happy medium with exercise and food?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? And I think if people aren't getting that support and that sort of one-to-one support, it's difficult. And I appreciate, and I really do appreciate that not everybody is in the position to afford sort of private one-to-one. I appreciate that is a luxury, and sadly not a luxury that we all have. I think for me, step away from diet roles, step away from social media, or step away from social media accounts that are pushing that negative weight sort of look. I think it's really, really the freedom you feel from going on. I know I did this myself, going on social media, whatever platform you use, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, whatever it is, TikTok, I know is more popular with the younger generation. It makes me feel old saying that.
I've made us feel so old on this podcast. I doubt we're even that old.
Oh, I'm 25 and I feel old, but here we are.
No, I'm 28. I'm 3 years older than you.
How could you be 3 years older? But no, you're sort of going on whatever platform suits you and you prefer, and getting rid of any account, blocking them, deleting them, that doesn't serve a positive purpose. Get rid of them. Because you'll feel lighter. Because I know myself, you can go on social media platforms and you can spend hours. If you're in that sort of mood and you're feeling a little bit low in mood, you've just been given a diagnosis and you're really, really focusing on this diagnosis, and perhaps you haven't got that intense one-to-one support, and you're seeking support and seeking answers, and you're coming across these fad diets, you've been told you need to lose X, Y, Z amount of weight, oh, try these pills, try these potions. And actually, that's not helpful. That's not evidence-based. That potentially could be harmful. And I think as well, if you are feeling low in mood, if you are sort of feeling, actually, my relationship with food is slipping, please get some support, whether that be sort of going through your GP and asking to sort of get that support, or going to various charities for that support. I know there's some fabulous local ones and some fabulous national ones, and getting that support. And sort of raising, actually, I'm not okay with how this is feeling for me, and actually saying that. And I know it takes bravery, and I know it takes courage to do that. But please, your voice is heard and someone will listen to you. And just, keep going. It's really important. And as I said, as more of a lighter touch one, what can we add to your diet rather than solely focusing on, oh my God, let's get rid of carbohydrates. Poor carbohydrates have done absolutely nothing wrong and they get so much.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I can't eat bread. Why? Let's look at what can we add. Like I say, fruit and vegetables. Can we add some more fibre sources there? Can we add some wholemeal bread? Can we add some seeds? Can we add some nuts? Can we add some more protein in there? Can we look at sort of plant-based protein? What can we add in? Why do we automatically need to focus on that takeaway?
I was just going to say, I love what you've said there in terms of add. What can you add to your life rather than take away? Because I don't know about you, but as soon as I say to myself, I can't have that, all I can think about is that thing. Even if it's not something that I really enjoy, it's automatically a thing. Like I did Dry January. I don't really drink that much. All I could think about was having a glass of Prosecco, and I don't really even enjoy drinking that much. So it came to my birthday, which is the end of January, and I was like, right, I'm having, like, I don't care, I'm not doing this anymore. And I had a glass of Prosecco, and yeah, it was nice. But actually, since then, I've realised I don't really actually enjoy drinking. I hate the day after, and I haven't currently had an alcoholic drink for 3 weeks. But it's not been because I've been like, you can't have it. It's because I've kind of been like, actually, if I think about all the other aspects of life that impacts, I'm not really enjoying it. And that's just a personal thing. So I think saying to yourself, how can I adapt my diet in a way that benefits me, that in a way that improves my life, that, maybe on a couple of days of the week, I'll have a wholemeal alternative, or I'll have brown rice rather than white rice. But that doesn't mean that every time you eat rice, it has to be brown. Like, you can still enjoy white rice and you can make brown rice more interesting and what have you. So I love that aspect of it, getting more creative, thinking about what you can add in. And also love what you said about social media, because I think, unfortunately, you can get stuck in a rabbit hole. And I think because social media is it's an imagery-based platform, when you're particularly struggling with weight or body image, it can be really dangerous because you get so sucked in. And I know when I'm struggling with my own disordered eating, because I find my discovery feed is just full of what I eat in a day videos and pictures of, idealized bodies. And I love doing what you said, you know, going through, getting rid of everybody, not going on my discovery feed to start with.
No.
And then just getting rid of people that don't provide that kind of encouragement or have you.
Just to touch on there with you sort of talking about that sort of IBS body liberation. As well as nutrition and diet, what can we add in terms of lifestyle that's going to be positive? Yes. Can we add some love? And I think as well, I know we touched on exercise lightly earlier, and I think there's this whole thing, oh God, getting exercise, or I don't want to do it. And I know myself, when I was younger, it was that, oh, we've got to go to the gym to exercise. And if you love the gym, no shame. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Good for you. You go to the gym and you have the best workout ever. But actually, I hate the gym.
Yeah.
You know, I would much rather go to a lovely gentle yoga group or go for a lovely dog walk. That's me. And what I might like, you might go, oh God, no, not yoga. Yeah. And go, actually, I prefer to go swimming or I prefer to go rock climbing.
Mm-hmm.
Find what works for you. It doesn't have to be. Actually, it shouldn't be unpleasant. It should be a really positive. And actually, on top of that, can we add some lovely self-care? Because when you've been given a diagnosis, it can be really stressful and very overwhelming. And actually, even if you haven't had a diagnosis and you're actually very, very healthy, good for you, I'm glad you are, let's still add self-care. Let's prioritise. I think 2025 is one of my personal goals. Prioritise yourself. Stop putting other people first and prioritise yourself. You know, every week, schedule, write it in your diary. I know we're all busy. Write in your diary one day of the week, even if it's just 10 minutes, to read a book. Find 10 minutes, at least 10 minutes once a week, and do an activity that you love, whether it be listening to this podcast, you never know, reading a book or having a bubble bath or, I don't know, listening to your favourite music, whatever it is, we need to find time for ourselves. So, yeah, self-care as well as diet and exercises is key for PCOS management.
Face doom scrolling with self-care.
Yes.
There you go. You don't have to find any extra time. Just, my partner said this. He was like, I don't have time for hobbies. And I was like, put your frigging phone down, stop doom scrolling, get outside.
Yes, love that. Replace doom scrolling.
My 2025 goal, which very much aligns with everything that we've spoken about today, is I can't dance. And my friend is an incredible dancer. And she goes to a dance studio about 5 times a week.
Wow.
And I've seen her videos. It's so body liberating. It's so free. So I have been to 2 dance classes now.
Oh, yeah.
First dance class was absolutely hilarious. I followed a lot. I mean, I have ADHD, so I have no coordination either. So, I just couldn't get anything. I couldn't remember any of the moves. But second class.
Yeah, but did you have a good time?
Yes. And the second class, absolutely loved it. Managed to follow along to the whole routine. Remembered everything. Came home. Performed the routine to my partner, and he was like, I love this version of you. So happy.
Great.
So definitely finding movement that brings you to life, because it is possible. You know, I think a lot of the time people think exercise has to be tricky and intense and awful, and actually it doesn't. It can be dancing around your house, you know, with your hairbrush or whatever. It's what works for you. So thank you so much, Georgia, for such a positive episode.
Thank you.
Where can people go to find out more about you?
Thank you. Firstly, thank you so much. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening. I really do appreciate it. If you're not sick of me, if you do want to see more of me, Instagram is gspence_nutrition. Facebook is Georgia Spence Nutrition. I haven't got TikTok yet, I'm afraid. On my website is www.georgiaspencenutrition.com.
Amazing, thank you. Georgia, if they're sick of one of us, it's going to be me after doing 4 years of this podcast. It's definitely not you. Well, thank you so much. Honestly, it's been such a pleasure to chat to you. It's been so lovely. If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.